This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 8th of April, 2022. We really have a situation on our hands with this upcoming French presidential election just exploding on the market's radar screen. At least I think if you look at corners of the market that are most directly impacted by that, I think the general market is not really respecting it that much. The U.S. equity market having its own agenda. These rising long rates are certainly providing lots of pressure. The hawkish FOMC this week. We probed that key first sort of tactical support yesterday. It survived so far. You can see that on slide two, just brief refresher, the 21-day moving average that survived, the 38.2% retracement that survived. This is of the NASDAQ 100. And I guess the latest argument could be that we're looking at this 55-day moving average as a further support. But those tactical supports in place and that robust resistance overhead, those highs that we've talked about, the 100 and 200-day moving average and the big 61.8% retracement of the sell-off wave from the highs. So just really caught in an iron grip, I think, in terms of pivoting this way or that, waiting for outcomes. Certainly the pressure coming, Peter, on the fixed income side, but are you seeing anything else, any new sort of new developments here? Or is it pretty much we're just kind of going sideways?
No, it's there is no new themes, no new developments in equities. It's actually been quiet for quite quiet for 2 days, and it's also quiet in Ukraine on the front lines. It almost feels like the quiet before the storm. And I think actually next week there will be a lot of things to talk about: earnings and the French election, more French election debates, and then we'll talk about that. But if you look at the themes, I saw a chart the other day that we have actually seen some of the biggest divergence inside the equity market in many, many decades. If you look across the classical sectors, and I just sorted our theme baskets on the year-to-date performance, and we also are seeing an almost 70 percentage point difference between commodities and e-commerce this year. Just underscores the fact that if you hadn't had commodities this year or defense stocks, you would have been left out naked in this decline. And actually, I have a slide on the repricing, but I think we should get to that French election because I think it's so super important. So if you start, John, from the top on what's going on, and then I have a small chart as well on French equities versus German equities.
Yeah, unfortunately, we couldn't have our French macro strategist Christopher Dembeck. And before you say who's that, he actually had a multi-hour TV debate head-to-head with Marine Le Pen on French TV. So we're definitely going to try to get him in on Monday to talk about this. But he sent out an internal note, sort of highlighting some of the tightening that's been going on. Among others, if you go to slide four here, you can see this little poll from a news article highlighting that the latest Harris Interactive poll, I had seen one that showed Macron only 54 to 46 over Le Pen in the second round. This one showing 51.5 to 48.5, essentially. So basically within the margin of polling error. And you see the development of the polls here from a Politico grab of polls of polls. And sort of, okay, so Macron got a bump post the Russian invasion. A lot of that has unwound, not all of it, but a lot of it has unwound. And then you see the surge for Le Pen and the surge for Mélenchon, clearly driven by the Zemmour and Pécresse voters that are just fleeing from there. I guess they're favoring those two candidates. So second round, it's going to all be all about turnout, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I think what's happening here is this sudden realization just over the matter of the last few days that this is not just a sure thing that Macron is going to be the next president. And the impact of a Le Pen presidency is massive, especially where we were in the narrative, which we also rolled out post the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That is, the EU is pulling together, mutual fiscal issuance, huge defense priorities, energy supply priorities, et cetera, driving a new and closer integration. This would shatter that picture. And I just want to actually skip once again, just to show you how the market is experiencing this. Of course, we've got the euro under pressure. I'll talk more about that in a moment. There lots of hedging flows, no doubt, just because they'll need to hedge flows because the euro will fall quite a bit if we do have a President Le Pen in 2 weeks plus. But look at the peripheral spreads on slide six. So I've put the 10-year spread of Germany versus France. That's the red line, Germany versus Italy, the blue line, and Germany versus Spain. That's the black line. Now, before you get too confused, the right axis is for the French spread, which is right at 55 basis points. The left axis is for the other two. And yes, their absolute spreads are higher, 163 basis points for Italy, about 100 basis points for Spain. But relative levels relative to where we've been before are far different. And France actually back up, getting close to those levels before the 2017 election, where she lost the second round very badly. Memory fails, I think it was 63-37 in the second round. Now, one thing we'll have to watch is, of course, the Sunday results, the turnout, who's getting what kind of votes, and then the gaming around which votes in the second round will go to who. But there's a key debate, and if I recall, there was and we'll get Christopher's input on this, there was a key television debate, which she failed very badly at, that saw her chances fading badly in 2017. So that would be the next step. But I think the market will be very unsettled if we get a very strong showing. And the momentum is favoring Le Pen at the moment. And it's gone from a one delta to a 25 plus delta now that we have a massive surprise here. So we need to respect the impact of this. And Peter, I know you've got a little bit of perspective on this in terms of the equities evaluations.
I actually got confused over the chart as well. So it's almost a criminal chart with the two y-axis when you're measuring the same thing. Anyway, it's Friday. So yeah, the French equities, I just quickly pulled the 12-month forward P ratio on French equities versus German equities. That's the chart you have here on slide 5. And as you can see, French equities are in the zone 15-20% more expensive than German equities. And you can see that this is actually historically high. I just find that interesting given the backdrop and what is really happening here. So that's potentially something to have in watch. Before we go to the commodities and the other things we need to talk about, I think one of the key issues in the market, and I cannot stress it enough, trying to have this conversation with all the clients I'm talking to, slide 3, the repricing of everything, or more specifically, the repricing of equities and bonds. I think it's a major theme. So it's the nominal versus real debate. So I looked at the US key total return index for the 7 to the 10-year treasuries benchmark index in the US. And if you subtract the CPI index from that, that's your chart to the right here on slide 3, we are now minus 20% down from the peak in 2020 in US government bonds. I don't know. I think this
real return
is minus 20%. I don't think this has happened in more than 4 decades. It's quite brutal, and it's so imperative to understand, to think about it. So for over a couple of years now, you have actually reduced your pricing power, and equally so in equities, we are down 27% from the peak when you price equities against commodities. And I think this is one of the most, I wouldn't call it scary. It's just it's a very fascinating chart, and I'm really really curious to see where this goes from here. But have these things in mind when you construct your portfolios. If you don't get the inflation and commodities right in this cycle, you will be not left at the station, but you will lose out in real terms.
Yeah, and speaking of losing out in real terms, that's one of the things that Le Pen addresses in her platform, which is to drop the 20% VAT on energy, but to 5.5% specifically, and not have any income tax for citizens under 30 years of age. So some, a lot of motivation to vote for her if you're falling into the categories there, addressing, I think, to some degree, the yellow vest movement. But we need to get to energy because we have a lot going on here with the crude oil price falling further, Chinese lockdowns, etc. What are the moving parts you're looking at here, Ole, when you're looking at crude oil?
many, many moving parts, John, and that's obviously what makes this so difficult to price right now. You mentioned lockdowns in China. There are estimates now that has taken in the region of 1 to 1.5 million barrels a day out of total demand. That's obviously helping to offset the lack of supplies coming from or the slowdown in production and supplies from Russia. In addition, the SPR release announced last week and also this week from the IEA, also adding some downward pressure. In addition to that, we had the very hawkish FOMC minutes raising concerns about the growth going forward, and with that also demand. So we had a bit of a technical break to the downside this week in Brent. We haven't really seen an extension of that break below the trend line and the 50-day moving average. So it seems like we are finding some support already here around the $100 mark. But as we talked about also on the we had a webinar yesterday just highlighting the takeaways from our outlook, which were out early in the week, just highlighting that normally this market moves on when there's a few hundred thousand barrel change in the outlook, that right now we are dealing with millions of barrels on either side. And that's really just creating the kind of volatility we're seeing.
Yeah, and then you've pulled up natural gas here. Slide 10, I want to go to that because I find it interesting. I was thinking back when the U.S. was promising all this gas to Europe, that with these price differentials, you know, on the order of 500%+, that surely it would tighten the U.S. gas market. Is that what's happening here, or is it weather, and what does the forward curve look like, or what's going on in gas? I think it's very interesting also for the future inflation and growth outlook for the U.S. to see this key price rising to the degree it has.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week in the U.S. market because we are seeing the impact of high energy prices here in Europe. We are seeing a slowdown, a beginning slowdown in demand, especially industrial demand. Producers cutting back because it's simply too expensive to produce what they normally produce. So that's one thing. But over stateside, we continue to see implied gasoline demand from U.S. motorists slow down. This is the time of year where demand tends to rise, but it has been slowing now for the past few weeks. So that is starting to be impacted by prices. And then you mentioned the gas prices here. We've become accustomed to U.S. gas prices sub $3, and suddenly we're trading above $6, and we've seen another strong move up this week. And it is a combination, John, of both some unseasonal cold weather in the U.S. You can see that on the measure showing the heating degree days on slide 10. It's suddenly picking up quite a bit. And that's adding to domestic demand. At the same time, LNG flows, you can see on the inserts as well, is near the low. And the lower that goes, that basically flows to the export terminals. So the bigger the minus, obviously, the bigger the export. So that is in record territory right now. And that's helping to basically seeing these two markets converge somewhat at this point. So so in the US, we are talking about doubling the gas price. And that's also remember what kind of impact that has on fertilizer production in the US, which has been a little bit shielded from the massive rallies we've seen in European fertilizer prices. But even in the US, they're picking up as well.
Yeah, I think the natural gas story is an interesting lead into a fun story. So last night I had to measure my gas use. You do that once a year, and I think I've said this on the podcast that my wife is at a war with Putin over natural gas. So we have turned down the temperature to 18 degrees Celsius from normal 21, 22. And I looked at our gas consumption. So we started that just on the day on the invasion. So and you measure it from around early April. So the impact from lowering that temperature is around 5 to 6 weeks. And I just looked at our gas consumption compared to the year before, and it's actually down 11%. So, and that's only from turning down over 6 weeks. I was quite surprised how big an impact it actually is on your consumption. Just a fun fact for the Friday.
Yeah, well, there's the rest of the winter to think about and comparative. I don't know that equation, but I'm sure they say that one of these recommendations, how much just turning it down 1 degree could actually benefit. We've turned down our electricity-based heating as well. So this, it does kill demand, Ola. And speaking of demand, one thing that's harder to kill demand for is food. What is there was an important report out from the UN on the global prices, but other things that we're looking at here for such a key thing as we're looking at a new growing season coming into view and for grains, et cetera.
Yeah, indeed. We probably by the time this podcast has been published, we've seen a number from the UN FAO. It has become increasingly attracting attention in recent months because of the surge we've seen in global food prices. And the index basically covers a basket of 95 different food commodities or food quotes. So it's quite comprehensive. And we do obviously expect another record reading following March. And remember what happened in March? We had wheat prices up by more than 15%, surging cotton, sugar, corn, wheat, cocoa. They're all a lot of these strong gains. So we'll filter through to a higher reading when the index is out. But that's a little bit backward looking. Forward looking, we will also be today because we got the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand report out from the US. They primarily would be focusing on ending stocks here on slide 9. I just put in some of the estimates versus last month or the previous report. and these can move the market quite a bit. I think also in the report today, the USDA will give their view on Black Sea exports of corn and wheat, and the market is obviously expecting quite a significant downgrade given what's happening in with the war in Ukraine being barred from their ports and not being able to export. It also led to the Ukraine Agricultural Consulting agency yesterday basically downgrading wheat harvest by 38% year on year and corn by 55%. So unfortunately, an area where inflation will continue to be felt across the world in terms of higher food prices.
Yeah, not good prospects there. Okay. All right. We just need to emphasize, I want to round out the FX space by looking at euro and euro dollar specifically. Back to, sorry for the random jumps in the slide deck today, but you can just pull up a euro dollar chart. And it looks like to me this last week or so of price action has really incorporated a lot of this sudden need to hedge or consider the risk of a Le Pen presidency and what that means for Europe and existentially as well over the longer term. So there's a gap risk, there's a significant weekend gap risk, a very classic weekend gap risk on election here. If there is something mind-boggling that the polls have gotten entirely wrong here, you're risking a very large gap, especially if you're leveraged into the open of trading Monday. And the positive gap could be there as well. I would suspect that the potential positive gap is far smaller than the potential negative gap because a positive outcome, you know, it looks like Macron is doing fine. It will see a little bit of a bump, but there's still a couple of weeks of uncertainty. And it's more about the negative gap risk that we need to consider here. So just consider that. And also versus the sterling, even though I think sterling is being a bit flattered here by the situation. Watching cable, by the way, sterling versus the dollar at the 130 level, a very big level for cable. And yen still negative as we are seeing this ongoing march higher in U.S. long yields. And that's providing, I think, some liquidity pressure across the board. Peter, we're running on a bit long here, but maybe you want to highlight a thing or two for the next week's earnings as we are kicking off essentially the Q1 earnings season.
Yes, finally. And per usual, it's the US that is leading the earnings season. And normally we would have a couple of US financials reporting on the Friday, but it's Easter Friday, so that's not going to happen next week. But on Wednesday, we have JP Morgan Chase, the bellwether of US financial industry, or sector, if you will. And also Tesco, and I think Tesco is an increasingly interesting given the food inflation that we are seeing. And then on Thursday, Ericsson here in Europe, Swedish company, big in 5G rollout, Fast Retailing, which is the parent company of Uniqlo, which is the competitor to Zara and H&M, same ballpark. And then we have Wells Fargo as well on commercial banking. Could argue Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, but it's. They typically don't move markets that much. I think Citigroup typically is more interesting because of their emerging market flavor. And then for the retail crowd, the ones that really love crypto, Coinbase could be of interest. It's not something that I'm cheering for or looking forward to, but it's still, you know, it's rather a large exchange in that industry.
All right. And then on the calendar for today, we have, as Ulla indicated, we probably already have that one of those key reports out, the gold food price index, and we have that supply and demand report out later. And minor bits and pieces, the Canadian jobs report could be interesting as we have a Bank of Canada meeting next week. They're expected to move 50 basis points. New Zealand, the RBNZ, expected next week to move 0.25%. But it's really all about this presidential election in France over the weekend. Are we suddenly thrown into the 2 weeks of nail biting over the future of Europe after this poll? Or can we breathe a sigh of relief, or sort of neither, sort of an in-between result, probably the highest probability scenario. Also up next week, that key inflation gauge, the Chinese March PPI. And I'm really curious to see US CPI on Tuesday, but also the retail sales on Thursday out of the US for March, a measure of consumer activity. And then again, the flash University of Michigan sentiment, this has been a very interesting survey to track because sentiment most definitely based on a lot of these purchasing decision and inflation related questions has declined close to the range lows of the last couple of decades. So interesting to see that figure as well. All right. Recognize the gap risk here. And it's not just in the euro. It could be in some of the fixed income in Europe, could be in some of the equity markets in Europe as well. If we get a real shocker over the weekend, be cognizant of that. Stay careful out there. Have a great weekend. And we'll be back next week with a Saxo Market Call. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.